last week, was it last week? Or last 2 weeks ago? Last 2 weeks ago, right? Before Shavuos. So the last time we had class, we began a discussion of Yerushalayim and the story of the conquest of Yerushalayim, or Ir David, Ir Tzion, Ir David, Yerushalayim, Yevus, names of more or less for the same place. There's some discussion as to whether they are precisely the same place or not, but we're going to jump right into the text. So let's put up, let's put everything up on the screen. Now, actually, what I'm going to also do, let's see if I can do this quickly, is in the chat, if you're on a computer, you should have access to a chat line, and I can actually send you a PDF copy of the source page. I'm going to pull the source page up on the screen, so if you don't get it, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But just in case you can, you want it, I've just posted it in the chat, and what I will do, hopefully I'll send around an email. I'd like to get everybody's email addresses on a list so that I can send you the file of the source page in advance, but for now we'll do it this way. So we were discussing Yerushalayim, and we talked about the fact that immediately upon coming to the throne over the sort of united kingdom of Yehuda and Benjamin, the first thing that it seems in the text, the first thing that David does is he goes to Yerushalayim, to the Jebusites. Vayelech hamelech v'anashav Yerushalayim el hayevusi yoshev Yerushalayim. And there's a whole discussion. Vayomer leDavid lemor lo tavoh hena ki im hesircha ha'ivim me'apischim lemor lo yavod David hena. David is told he can't come here except by taking away the ivrim and pischim, the blind and the lame. Vayilkod David et nitzudat Tzion. David nevertheless takes the stronghold of Tzion, the city of David, calls it the city of David. Vayomer David vayomahu kol makei yivusi v'yiga b'tzinor. David says on that day, whoever shall smite the Jebusites and get to the gutter, let be schimit the ivrim snoei nefesh David and remove the lame and the blind, whatever that phrase means. Aken yomru iver bepisach leavo labayit. So it says the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. Ayeshev David b'mitzudah v'yikala ir David. David then dwelt in the stronghold and called it the city of David. And this is classically understood to be the conquest of Yerushalayim, or the conquest of Yevus, or the Jebusites. A lot of phrases in this passage that need much greater explanation, including a discussion of the Ivrim and the Pisrim. Who are these blind and the lame? What are they referred to? What's going on in the text itself? We spend some time discussing or sort of reading through this passage initially, and I said I would park the textual issues of this parak aside. What's what we're going to do. I sort of want to focus for now on the broader question of Yerushalayim overall, and we'll come back to the text sort of as we finish our kind of general overview of Yerushalayim in Tanakh. So for now, the question that we asked is, why is it that it takes more or less 400 years before anybody wakes up to Yerushalayim? We spent some time talking about how Yerushalayim is initially conquered in the time of Yehoshua, but then never settled. You see that Yerushalayim is again conquered in the days of the Shoftim and then abandoned. They come to Yerushalayim several times, but in the end, it seems to be totally abandoned. Yeah, somebody has a question? Is that a question? Yes, no?
Yeah, hold on for a second.
No. I showed you the reference in the end of the book of Shoftim to the fact that the story of the Pilegish Begivo, that they come to the city of Yevus, and this is the story of Pilegish Begivo. They come to the city of Yevus, which is Yerushalayim. Vayakom ayelech vayavo ad nochach Yevus, hi Yerushalayim. They come to the city of Yevus, which is Yerushalayim. This is the end of the period of Sefer Shoftim. And they want to go somewhere to sleep overnight. And he says to them, we're not going to go to Yavuz because Yavuz is in Ir Nochri. Lo nasur el Ir Nochri, Ashalom ibn Yisraelim. The rest of the story is a tragedy, but the point of it for us is that already for 400 years, Yavuz is considered a Jebusite city and has no Jewish connection. It's not Yerushalayim. I mean, it's Yerushalayim, but it's not inhabited. The question becomes, why not? What is it about Yerushalayim? What happened to Yerushalayim that it was so ignored for all of those for all of these years? It would seem almost as if to suggest that Yerushalayim was a non-known, was an unknown concept or entity, that they didn't know about Yerushalayim, or at least they didn't know that Yerushalayim was Yerushalayim, if you want to put it in those terms. Right? They had no point of understanding, they had no reference to the place and the concept of the place. And that's very odd. It's odd because Yerushalayim plays such a central role in Sefer Bereishit. And so what I wanted to do is kind of go backwards. We're working our way backwards. We started with Shmuel, then we went back to Shoftim Yeshua, and now we're going to go all the way back to Sefer Bereishit and look at the story of Yerushalayim as it emerges initially in Sefer Bereishit, and see if we can't trace what happened to Yerushalayim, what was it initially supposed to be, and what eventually was determined to happen to Yerushalayim. So that's our goal for today, is to go back, or at least to start, a journey back to Yerushalayim in the days of Sefer Bereishit. So for that journey, I want to start with a midrash. Very famous midrash, I'll put that on the source page, that identifies the name Yerushalayim. The medrash says the following, and we're going to come to each of these concepts or each part of this medrash, but medrash in Bereishit Rabbah talks about the name of Yerushalayim. Avraham Karato Yireh. Medrash starts by talking about the fact that Yerushalayim, the name of Yerushalayim, is a hybrid of two words. And the first word that it is contained in the word Yerushalayim is the word Yeru or Yireh, a name given to it by Avram Avinu in the context of the story of the Akedah. Shneimar v'yikra Avraham Shem Hamakom Ahu Hashem Yireh. Avraham named that place the place that God shall see. We're going to come back to that phrase in a few minutes and analyze it in more depth. Shem, now here the reference to Shem is a reference to Shem ben Noach. Shem ben Noach is by midrashic identification, the hidden identity of Malkitzedek. This is really a reference to Malkitzedek. But there is a Masoret, there is a Medrash that says that Malkitzedek was in fact Shem ben Noach. How Malkitzedek comes to being Shem ben Noach, I'll show you in a few minutes. But Shem Karato Shalem, this individual by the name of Shem ben Noach, also known as Malkitzedek, he called it Shalem, as it says, Umalkitzedek Melech Shalem. After the story of Abraham in the war, the four kings and the five kings, he comes to a conference after the war with the king of Sodom and the king of Shalem, Malkitzedek Melech Shalem. They have a whole dialogue. We'll see that dialogue as well. And he called the city Shalem, or it was known as Shalem, as it says, Malkitzedek Melech Shalem. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Im Kore Ani Oto Yireh. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a dilemma. I have two very powerful, prominent people who have given different names to the same city. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called the city Avraham. If I name the city the name that Avraham gave it, namely Yireh, Shem Adam Tzadik Mitraem, I will be insulting Malkitzedek or Shem Ben Noach, who called it Shalem. Whereas Im Korani Oto Shalem, if I call the city Shalem, the name that Malkitzedek gave it, Abraham, Adam Tzadik Mitraem. I will be insulting Abraham, also a righteous person. Two righteous people, the same generation, Abraham and Melchizedek. They each gave the city a different name, Yireh and Shalem. Ela Hareni Koreoto Yerushalayim Kamosh Karushnehem, Yireh Shalem. Yireh, the name that God, Abraham gave it. Shalem, the name Melchizedek gave it. Yerushalayim. Now, even before I get to the text of the stories, you understand that Yireh and Shalem are two names that reflect very different things. Yireh comes from the word to see or fear of God, right? Yirat Hashem. Shalem comes from the word shalom, peace. Right? So essentially, one is a kind of a divine-focused, heavenly-focused phrase, Hashem Yireh. And the other is more of a society-based, ben adam l'chavero, shalom between the people, shalom in the world, righteousness, Melchizedek. So I have, right in the name of Yerushalayim, as the Medrash describes it, two characteristics of this city. One is ben adam l'makom, one is ben adam l'chavero, one between God and Israel, God and mankind, the other between people, civilization. Two very different aspects of the city that have to come together. The Medrash, that's really the point of this Medrash, is that there's two dynamics or two aspects of Yerushalayim that converge as one. But it's also just an observation about the way Yerushalayim is called Yerushalayim or Yerushalayim. You should know that Yerushalayim in Tanakh is not spelled the same way we spell it. Yerushalayim in Tanakh is spelled without the second yud. In almost every reference to Yerushalayim in Tanakh, it's spelled without the second yud. I'll do a quick search for you.
Does Hashem usually worry about insulting people?
No, obviously this is a medrash that has to be understood on a different level. I'm not worried about God insulting anybody, but medrash is trying to basically describe the convergence of two stories to Yerushalayim, or two dynamics, or two aspects of Yerushalayim. I just want to do a quick. If you look at the way Yerushalayim is. Okay, this is a reference to Yerushalayim in Tanakh. Every place Yerushalayim appears in Tanakh, 625. Wow. And if you look at the text, you'll see that Yerushalayim is almost always spelled without the second yud. Can you see it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yerushalayim is always in Tanakh, always spelled without the second yud.
That's amazing.
Okay, we don't notice it because we spell Yerushalayim with a second yud all the time. But Yerushalayim in all of, there's only 10 places, I believe, in all of Tanakh where Yerushalayim is spelled with a second yud. But if you ignored the vowels and put vowels to it without the letters, it would actually spell Yerushalem, which is why the English translation of Yerushalayim, by the way, is, what's the English name for Yerushalayim?
Jerusalem.
L-A-M.
Okay. It's called, in English, it's called Jerusalem and not Jerusalem. I don't know what they would translate it as, because it's spelled Jerusalem, Yerushalem. So its actual transliteration is based on a sort of more academic reading of the text, which ignored that extra chirik between the lamed and the mem, because the letter itself is missing in Tanakh. It's actually Yerushalem and not Yerushalayim. Just that we call it Yerushalayim. In all the places, in all of Tanakh, in fact, it is spelled Yerushalayim. I think, if I'm not mistaken, no, that's not giving you the.
He's so nimble with the computer.
I think in all of Tanakh, I think there are only five places where it's spelt with a yud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep. So in all the 600 and some odd references to Yerushalayim and Tanakh, it's spelt without a second yud. In there are five places in Tanakh where it's spelt with a yud, with a second yud. So it's just a piece of trivia. Should be aware that when the Medrash says Yerushalayim, it's actually based on the literal spelling of the name of the city, Jerusalem, Yerushalayim. So what this Medrash is really pointing to is two origins to the story of Yerushalayim that are relevant to us. Obviously, God is not worried about upsetting anybody, as Adina has pointed out. But what the Medrash is really identifying is two different trajectories or traditions from where the story of Yerushalayim begins. And at least in the text of Tanakh, there are midrashic connections to a much earlier reference of Yerushalayim as the foundation stone of the world. I'm going to leave that out of the picture for now because it's more complicated. But at least in the text of Tanakh, there are two places where the story of Yerushalayim in Sefer Bereishit, where Yerushalayim plays a central role. And I want to explore those two places today. They are the focal point of the discussion. What happened to Yerushalayim at the end, post Sefer Bereishit? When did the Masoret, the tradition of the location of this city, or God's city, if as it were, disappear? Why does David not know, or does any of the Jewish leaders from Yoshua to David, why do they ignore Yerushalayim? So our story begins with the Akedah. So I think it's a foregone conclusion that the first place where Yerushalayim plays a central role in the text in Sefer Bereishit, as this Medrash points out, is Abraham's naming of the place, Hashem Yireh, which is of course the Akedah. So we're going to look at the story of the Akedah now. I put the text here on the source page, but for our purposes, for a minute, I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to pull it up here. Bereishit Perek Chof Bet. Okay, so this is the story of the Akedah. I'm just going to work through the text for a second, and then we'll look at some of the observations. God tested Abraham. I'm not going to get into all the theological issues related to the Akedah. There are many and they are complex. There's much to be said about them. But for now, I just want to focus on the location, the place of the story of the Akedah. God said to Abraham, God answered, take your one and only son, Yitzchak, whom you love, and go to Eretz Hamoriah. So first of all, does God tell Abraham where to take Yitzchak?
He gives him a location.
Right. More or less, he gives him the region. He tells him Eretz HaMoriah, the land of Moriah. The land of Moriah is essentially Har HaBayit, or the region of Har HaBayit. Har HaBayit is also referred to as Har HaMoriah, and this is Eretz HaMoriah. So that land was known. Avram's in Hebron. If you head north from Hebron by foot, along what's referred to as Derech Avot, the patriarch's path, which is essentially the top ridge of the mountains as you go from Hebron to Yerushalayim. More or less, it's a three-day journey to get by foot from Hebron to Yerushalayim. First vantage point you get is from a place called Armon HaNetziv. That is of any significance. Take him there and offer him as a offering. Al achad heharim asher omar elecha. One of the mountains which I will tell you. So right off the bat, two things are odd. Number one, on the one hand, he tells him where to go, tells him what land, what region to go to. On the other hand, When he gets there, there could be more than one mountaintop. And we know Yerushalayim is surrounded by mountains. Harim Savivla. At least on three sides, there are mountains. There's Har Tzion, there's Har Abayit or Har Moriah, there's Har Tzion,
Har
Zetim. Right? So there are mountains. Which mountain? I'll tell you which one. Asher Amar Elach. Eshkem Avram Baboker, Avram got up in the morning, Moshe Chamoro, he saddled his donkey, he took his two lads with him, Shnei Naravimo, and he took the wood for the offering. Vayakom Vayelech El Hamakom Asher Amar Lo Elokim. Whoops, sorry about that. And he went to the place that God told him. Vayom HaShlishi, on the third day, Vayisa Avram Et Einav, Vayaret Hamakom Merechok, lifted up his eyes, he saw the place from afar. Vayom Avram Al Narav, Shulechem Poim Machamor, Vani Vana Nacha Adko, Nishtachavev Nashuv Alechem. Abraham sees the place. Amidst the myriad of mountains, Abraham identifies which one it's supposed to go to. He tells the lads to remain behind. He's going on his own. ויקח אברהם את עצי העולה וישם על יצחק בנו ויקח בידו את האש ואת המאכלת. He and Yitzchak go together, ויחו שניהם יחדיו. Yitzchak and Abraham have a little bit of a conversation. He says to him, my father, Abraham answers, Hineni, Hineni, my son. ויאמר, I see a fire, I see wood, I don't see the animal. ויאמר אברהם, אלוקים יראה לו עשה לעולה בני. God will show the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. Much has been said about that phrase. Vayelchu shneim yachdav, they went together. Vayavo el hamakom asher amar lo Elokim. They come to the place which God had told him. Even shem Avraham at mizbeach, Avraham builds a mizbeach there, and he puts the wood, and he's ready to, he takes Yitzchak, he puts him on the altar, he's about to take the knife. Vayikra la malach Hashem min hashamayim, an angel calls out to him from heaven, and he says to him, Avraham, Avraham, hineni, God says to him, al tishlach yadcha lanar, don't touch the child, don't do anything, ki ata yadati, ki yirei Elokim ata, now I know that you fear God, by not holding back your son from me. Abraham lifted up his eyes. He saw an isle, a ram, in the bushes. He took it, and he brought that as an offering in lieu or instead of his son. Vayikra Avraham pasuk yedaled. Vayikra Avraham shem hamakom hahu Hashem yireh. Avraham called the name of the place, God will see. Asher ye'amer hayom. Bahar Hashem Yera'eh. On Hashem's mountain, it will be seen. And that's the end of the story. So, a few things stand out for us in terms of our story. We could spend a year and a half talking about the Akedah. We're not going to. I want to just focus just on the place. Does God identify this place or not? So the irony is that to Avraham, Hashem does identify it. Not by name, but Hashem shows him, comes to Eretz Moriah, tells him to go to the right land, and then he shows him which mountain. Hamakom asher amar lo Elokim. So somehow God told him exactly which mountain, upon which mountain to bring this offering. Hamakom asher amar lo Elokim. We, the reader, are we told which place it is?
No.
Right? No. And that's very odd, that we are not told the name of this mountain. There's Har Moriah. The Eretz Moriah essentially contains multiple mountaintops. Har Zetim, Har Tzion, Har Moriah, names that we gave it. But of the different mountains that are in that region, for whatever reason, the text does not tell us the name of the mountain.
So why is that so important?
So we'll see why that's so important. We're left with this mystery of reading the Akedah, and so much of the story revolves around God showing Abraham which place it was, and yet the text seems to omit or hide the name of this place, or the identity of this place. So we're told it's there, and Abraham even renames it, and he gives it the name Hashem Yireh, but we're left with this kind of hole. Like, okay, so which place is it? If I were to read the story and say to you, okay, can you identify which of the mountains in that region this story took place on? You, based on the text itself, you would not be able to do so.
Okay, Rabbi, is it not possible the mountain didn't have a name then?
It is possible. I'm going to... It's possible, but unlikely. Because almost every mountain in Tanakh has some kind of reference. Har Tabor, Har Carmel, Har Zeitim, Har Zion, Yevus, even if it's Canaanite names, right? Every region, every hill had a name. So is it possible? Yes, but I think it's probably less likely. And I'll come back to that in a few minutes. But I want to take the same story and I want to throw it through a kind of a lab. So this website is a really interesting website. It's called Al HaTorah, and you can do all kinds of fun things with this. Okay, I'm going to show you a little bit of a trick. This is the same story of the Akedah. Okay, it's the exact same story. This website has what's called a Ma'avadat Tanakh. It's a lab. It makes life very easy. What it does is it's an engine that counts words. And so I don't even have to work very hard to figure out which words appear more often than other words in this story. And it gives you the stats right here. Every word in this parak and how many times it appears. I'm particularly interested in the phrase of Hamakom, the number of places or times that the description of this place is referred to as the place. He got up and he went to the place that God told him. He saw the place from afar. He came to that place that God told him. And he even gave a name to that place. And he named that place Hashem Yireh. So until Abraham names it, it's only referred to as the place.
Hamakom. So does that mean some mountains or some hills didn't have names until this one?
That's what she asked me that question. That was the question. It's possible. I don't think so, though. They can be renamed, but I don't think that they had no name. I think we're going to have to see the story further. But there's another word that appears in this story almost as many times, if not more, and that is the root of Yirah. Okay, Makom appears 4 times, the root Yirah or Yireh appears 5 times. Right. So if you look at the word vayar, vayar tamakom, he saw the place. Vayomer Abraham Elokim Yireh haseh. Abraham says to Yitzchak, God will show the lamb or the animal. Vayisar Abraham etena vayar, lifted up his eyes and he saw the place. And then he names the place Hashem Yireh. God will see or will show. And then again, Hashem Yireh Hayom B'har Hashem Yireh.
Who? For what?
So I have this, it's an interesting moment where the two words that are central to the story, besides the story itself of the Akedah, are the place itself, Hamakom, And the fact that Abraham names it, but he names it with a name that says Hashem Yireh. Now, what does the phrase Hashem Yireh mean? God will show. Right? Yireh can mean to see, to show. Yireh can mean to fear. Right? Typically, this is translated as a place of God fearing. Hashem Yireh, Hashem Yireh, Yom Bahar Hashem Yireh. On this mountain, God will be seen or feared. Right? But in the context, actually, one of the other references is that's not, I don't know why it didn't show up, but Ki Yireh Elokim Ano Ata. Hashem says to Abraham, now I know that you fear God. Ki Yireh Elokim Ata. So you have to add that. There's an actual sixth reference here. But what does the phrase Hashem Yireh mean? So Yireh can mean to see, can mean to be, it's a different root to be seen or to be feared. But
I thought it was awe.
Yireh in terms of fear or awe, but Yireh here means to see or to show. Elokim Yireh lo haseh, vayar et hamakom. This is not Yireh in terms of fear. This is Yireh in terms of lirot, to see, right, with your eyes. Vayar et hamakom, Abraham saw the place. Yireh lo haseh, God will show the lamb. Vayar, v'hineh ayel, he lifted up his eyes and he saw the ayel. Hashem Yireh. God will see. On this mountain, God will be seen. Okay? So that all references to Ro'eh, Resh Aleph Hey, not the root Yareh or Yud Resh Aleph. They sound the same, but they're actually two different roots. They're two different Shorashim. The word Yirah is a fascinating word because whereas it means to see, but in the context here, I think it means something much deeper, which is to choose, or to show by demonstration, meaning by choice. When Abraham says to Yitzchak, "Yomer Abraham Elokim Yireh lo haseh li'olah b'ni," what is he really saying? What he's saying is that God will choose the appropriate korban for him, my son. Again, there's a double entendre there as to whether or not he meant for the ben, for Yitzchak to be the Ola or not, but the notion that Hashem Yireh lo, God will show which animals, which korban shall be brought, in the same way that Hashem Yireh, the place is a place that God will show or choose or demonstrate. Hashem, right, will choose the Ola, Hashem will choose the place. Which place does Abraham go to? A place that is chosen by God, a place that is pointed out by God. One of the places that I will show you, that I will demonstrate to you, that I will choose for you. And he calls the name of the place Hashem Yireh. Again, God will see or choose this place. And the notion that Lirot, that Hashem sees, meaning that Hashem chooses, the connection between Yirah and Bechira is very important. I'll give you an example. We'll come back to the source page for a second. So I put all of this on the source page in the text, but you'll see it as well. Let me come back to two Psukim in Dvar. Both, by the way, refer to Yerushalayim. How is Yerushalayim called in Sefer Dvarim? Anybody know?
Ba'makom asher Hashem yivchar.
Right. Ba'makom asher yivchar Hashem sheken shmo sham. Exactly right. In Sefer Dvarim, Yerushalayim is referred to by concept, not by name. And over and over and over again, it's referred to in the here the psukim. It's referred to in a few places. Lotasun ken ki im el hamakom ashi yivchar Hashem elokechem mikol shivtechem lasum et shmo sham lishichnoti drushu uvata shama. The place that God will choose amongst all of your tribes to place his name there, to that place you shall seek and you shall come. and there you shall bring all of your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and your tithes and your waved offerings, etc. The notion that this place, which eventually becomes known as Yerushalayim, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokechem Bo L'Shaken Shmo Sham, the place that God shall choose, over and over again, it's referred to by this phrase, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that God will choose. In fact, the Rambam's laws, when the Rambam codified all of Jewish law in 14 volumes of Halacha, the entire section devoted to the temple itself, the Beis HaMikdash, the structure of how to build it, where to build it, when to build it, all the laws of the Beit HaMikdash are called Hilchot Beit HaBechira, the house of the chosen house, Bechira, because it's referred to here constantly as Makom HaShivchar Hashem. But I want to show you Pesukim Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet in particular. Hisham Elecha, be careful. Pen taleo lotecha b'chol makom asher tireh, lest you bring the sacrifices in any place that you see, rather ki'im b'makom asher yivcha Hashem b'achad shvatecha sham taleo lotecha. Not where in any place where you see, but only in the place that God chooses. If you look carefully at these two verses, you'll see that there's a synonym being played out. The two words that are synonymous here are God chooses versus what we choose. The place that we see or choose is the place of sacrifices versus the place that God chooses or sees is the place of sacrifices. Do you see the connection? I put it out here in this copy of the text as well. Don't bring the sacrifices in any place that you see, but only in the place that God will choose. And you can see the relationship between to see and to choose. Another place where you see the exact same language play out is in the pasuk we quote constantly with regard to the Shalosh Regalim. Shalosh pa'amim bashana yeira'eh kol zchurchat b'nei Hashem alakacha. Three times a year, every member of the Jewish people shall be seen. B'makom asher yivchar b'chag hamatzot b'chag haShavuot b'chag haSukkot, the place of asher yivchar, b'makom asher, that should be highlighted, by the way. Sorry about that. The place that God will choose. Makom asher yivchar, chag hamatzot, chag haSukkot, Shavuot, chag haSukkot, v'lo yeira'eh et pnei Hashem ekam, and don't be seen empty-handed before God.
How come you don't put any emphasis on this word makom, which appears a million times here?
I'm going to come back to that. I absolutely am, but I'm going to come back to it. So hang on there with that observation, because it's very important. So here you have, again, the reference, and the place that God, in that place that God will choose, Makom Asher Yivchar, we are seen. Right? We are seen three times a year. How do we begin the tefillah of Shalosh Regalim? What's the first bracha of the tefillah of Shalosh Regalim? Ata?
Ata b'chartanu.
Ata b'chartanu mikol ha'amim. You choose us from amongst all the nations. We are seen because we are chosen. When Hashem sees, Hashem chooses. That's the identification. That's the issue. So the place that God will see or demonstrate is the place that God will choose. The people that God sees or is seen before God are the people that God chooses. And the offering, the animal, that God will show, your Elo Haseh, is the avoda that God will choose. It, ultimately, the place, the who, the what, and the how, and the where of Avodas Hashem, everything related to the service of God, where, place that God will choose. Whom? The people that God will choose. Yira'eh kol zchucha, v'lo yira'eh p'nei Hashem etam. When? What? What kind of animal? Hashem yira'eh lo haseh b'ni. God will choose the kind of offering. When? The place and the time that God will choose. Everything about the avoda is defined by the choice of God. Must be by God's choice. Can't be decided by human decision. Every aspect is makoma sheyivchar Hashem, God will choose, hasel yirelo haseh, God will choose the animal, and God will choose the people. Now there's a full
circle. Now, is there a connection between the book of Shoftim, where each chapter ends with everybody did what they saw right in their own eyes, and this?
Yes. Yes, there is. But I would have to devote a shiur to explaining that connection, but you are correct. The opposite of Makom HaShivchar Hashem is Ish Kol Yashar Beinav Yaseh. It's actually referenced in the same parak in Devar. The phrase comes from the same parak in Devar. And it's not an accident. I want to explain this concept because it's very important. It's not an accident that every aspect of the avoda has to be chosen by God. Because the alternative is very controversial. If we chose the place, or if we chose the format, or if we chose the who would be the designated representative, if any aspect of the avoda were to be chosen by us, becomes very complicated theologically. Because what you're basically saying is that we're going to create a structure and a place and a format, and we're going to invite God as our guests. The theology behind avoda has to be one in which we are God's guest, not the other way around. It's a very subtle point, but its theology is enormous. You can't determine the nature of how the avoda is to take place, or you run the risk of inviting God into your home as your guest and not the other way around. We are guests in God's world, not vice versa. You know who made this mistake? Tragically? Nadav and Avihu. Because when Nadav and Avihu brought their offering, the pasuk says that they brought an esh zara asher lo tziva otam, a foreign fire or a foreign offering that was not commanded. And what made it foreign was, by definition, the fact that it was not commanded. Right? The Esh Zara, the fact that which made it foreign, was the fact that it was not commanded. Now, what do we call idolatry? What's the Hebrew term for idolatry?
Avodah Zara.
Avodah Zara. Foreign worship. The words are taken exactly from the story of Nadav and Avihu. Any avoda to Hashem that is zara, because it is not commanded by God, it's commanded by us. We invented it, we created it, we chose it. If we choose it by definition, it becomes idolatrous, it becomes problematic, because it's not we who invite God into our home, it is God who invites us into his home. And so the place is chosen by God, just as the nature of what kind of animal is chosen or offering is chosen by God, and the who, atavachartanu, is chosen by God. That's part of the nature. So Hashem Yireh, that's all Abraham's context. Abraham sees this mountain that God chooses. He sees the offering that God chooses, and ultimately he names the place Hashem Yireh, a place that God will, now translate it. He names the place Hashem Yireh, the place that God will
choose.
That's the phrase that then in Sefer Devarim gets translated as a Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that God will choose.
Okay. But why could Hashem not have chosen it by name?
I haven't answered that question yet. I'm only setting up the context. I will, Bezrat Hashem, answer that question, if not this week, by next week. But you are correct. He could have chosen it by name. At this point, the place is nameless. It's just...
I also want to bring up the name Moriah. Is there a connection with that name?
Midrashically or textually?
I was thinking textually, because also one of the names of Sinai was Moriah, according to Midrash.
That's a Midrash. That comes from the word Hora'ah.
Okay.
This Moriah is, again, there's a lot of Midrashim about it, but in the shot of it, it's Eretz Moriah, which is a region. So there's a lot of places in Eretz Moriah that could have been that place. We don't know where it is. And that's
so is that how we that's how we get to this word Hamakom?
That so it's referred to only in this generic of Hamakom. It's never referred to by name. And the only name Abraham gives it is generic. Hashem Yireh, God will choose. So we're left with this bit of a mystery. Does Abraham know where it is? Yes. But it remains unknown in terms of the text, identified where it is. That's part one of the story. Okay, let's go to part two of the story. Part two of the story, according to the Medrash, is that there was, that this name, this city was called Shalem. Now, it's unclear whether Shalem is in Yerushalayim in the Pshat of Tanakh, whether or not Yerushalayim and Shalem are the same place. There's actually a place near Shechem that's also referred to as Shalem. Yaakov comes there by Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. So it's unclear exactly whether Shalem is in fact in the Pshat of Tanakh the same as the city of Yerushalayim. But I want to point out this conversation here. This is the conversation Abraham has with Malki Tzedek. This is already Breshit Perek Yudalad. Melech Sodom Likrato, King of Sodom comes out to greet Abraham after he came back from destroying Kedala Omer and his forces. And Malkitzedek Melech Shalem, Hotzi Lechem Bayayin, Malkitzedek, King of Shalem, comes out to greet him and he brings bread and wine. And he is a Kohen Le'elayon, he is a priest to God on high. He blesses Abraham and he says to him, Baruch Abraham le'el elyon kone shamayim ba'aretz. Blessed is Abraham to God on high, master of heaven and earth. Uvaruch el elyon Hashem igen tzarecha b'yadecha. And blessed is God on high who has protected you from your enemies. Has become your shield from your enemies. So, right away, two things jump off this page from Malkitzedek's blessing to Abraham. And they are?
How does he know all of this?
Clearly, Malkitzedek is depicted as a very righteous person who understands theology of monotheism. He's described God as God on high, master of heaven and earth. These are the roots. Here you have an explicit reference to the roots of monotheism. In the name expressed through Malkitzedek, Malach Shalem. This is why, by the way, Chazal identify Malkitzedek with Shem ben Noach. Because Malkitzedek here is an extraordinarily righteous and theologically grounded individual. He believes not in idolatry, but in one universal God of heaven and earth. Kohen le'elayon, priest to God on high. He doesn't believe in idols. He believes in a universal God for all of humankind, Shemayim Ba'aretz. And he blesses Abraham for his faith in God on high and whom God has protected, Magen Tzarecha B'yadecha. It's also an interesting reference here, because how do we end the first bracha of Shemona Esrei? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avotenu Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov Hakel Hagadol Hagibor Ve'anara Kel Elyon. Right, the phrase in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei is taken from here. Kel Elyon Gamel Chasadim Tovim etc. Baruch atah Hashem. How does the bracha end?
Mogen
Avraham. Two key phrases of the first bracha of Shemona Esrei are taken from this statement of Malki Tzedek. And that already tells me that there's a connection between Malki Tzedek and, if not the city of Shalem, certainly the Masoret, the tradition of a faith, of a trust, of a belief in a God who is a universal God, the monotheistic foundation of what eventually will become the faith of Avraham. Now there's another reference to the king of Yerushalayim, and probably why Chazal connect this Shalem to Yerushalayim. It's because if you look in Yehoshua, the name of the king of Yerushalayim, and there Yerushalayim is mentioned by name, although again without the Yud, is Vayikishma Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim. When Yehoshua goes to fight the wars against Yerushalayim, he fights against the king by the name of Adoni Tzedek. Notice the name of the king of Yerushalayim in Yehoshua's time is called
Adoni Tzedek.
Adoni Tzedek. The name of the king of Yerushalayim in Abraham's time?
Malki
Tzedek. So the Radak says that all the kings of Yerushalayim were called by some name of Tzedek. Malki Tzedek, Adoni Tzedek. Right? That was the name of like a paro of Egypt. One possibility. I'll give you another possibility. What was the original name of the city?
Yavuz.
Yavuzis had the Jebusites referred to it as, but this is prior to the Jebusites. What's its original name? I'm going to suggest you its original name was Tzedek.
Oh.
And hence the king is Malki Tzedek or Adoni Tzedek.
It says Melech Shalem.
And hence, hence the, again, its original name, if you go back, hence the Nevi'im refer to Yerushalayim as the city that shall once again be called Ir HaTzedek. Meshiv Shavtayach Kevarishana V'yotzayach Kevatkla Achrechen Yikarelach Ir HaTzedek. So that might be a play on words, I'm not sure, but I'm going to leave that as a possibility. But in all cases, the second trajectory of Yerushalayim is certainly, as the Pshat seems to be, that Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem, Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim, that this is a city that is founded either as a city that has a faith that connects to Abraham or to monotheism, or a righteousness or a tradition or a trajectory of Adoni Tzedek. That's sort of the earthly side of the history of Yerushalayim. So the place is known. We have this place called Shalem or Tzedek. According to our Masoret, that's the place that Abraham went to for the Akedah. And yet, it comes to Sefer Yeshua, and we have no reference whatsoever to the connection between the two. My question to you is, at what point does that Masoret get lost? And I'm going to argue that we know exactly when that Masoret disappears. And not only do we know when it disappears, we probably know why. Take a look at this story. A little bit of a feedback loop. Take a look at this story. You know what? Let's do it. Yaakov running away from Esav on his way out to Charan. V'atzei Yaakov mi-Be'er Sheva v'yelech Charan. Yaakov runs from Be'er Sheva down to the south, headed to Charan. V'yifga b'makom.
Do you have
he
it?
Places, and he number arrives four. At that place. Now, b'makom includes the definitive article, the place. He went to sleep. Because the sun set. He took from the stones of the place and he put it as a pillow under his head. And he went to sleep in that place. And he had a dream. And in this dream, which I'm going to skip for now, he has a dream. He sees a ladder going up to heaven, and he sees angels going up and down, and he sees God standing over him, and God's giving him his whole promise. Fine. Skip the dream. Vayikatz Yaakov mishnato. Yaakov awoke from his dream. Vayomer, and he said, Achen, whoa, yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. There is God in this place. Anochi lo yadati. I had no idea. Vayira, he was afraid. How awe-inspiring is this place? How wondrous, how terrible is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gates of heaven. Okay. Before I reveal the rest of this passage, based on just what I've read so far, you tell me, where is Yaakov?
If you're going to use that word makom, then he's near Moria.
All right. All the evidence points to the fact that he's in Eretz Moria, or that he's on Har HaBayit, that he's in Yerushalayim. Agreed? Five times. He calls the place, he describes it as the place of the gates of heaven, as the place of the house of God. He sees a vision of angels going up and down from heaven upon a ladder grounded upon the ground, and heaven is rooted in the heavens. There's a whole vision.
So then the stones that he takes becomes important.
Wait. So Vayifka b'makom, says Rashi, lo hizkira kutub be'eza makom, doesn't tell us which place, says Rashi. Elabamakom, with a definitive article, with the patach, the place. The place mentioned somewhere else must be the same place mentioned earlier. Vizahara Moriah, which must be a reference to the mountain of Harabait. Shne Marbo Vayira Hamakom Merachok. He saw the place from afar. So clearly Yaakov must be in the same place that Abraham was. Agreed? Yes?
Yep.
Probably.
What if I told you that he wasn't in Yerushalayim at all? So let's look at the end of the verse.
That's what
Yaakov b'boker. Yaakov got up in the morning. He took the stone and he made it into an altar, into some kind of a monument. He took Shemen Arosho, he poured oil on it, and he names the place. Vayikra Shema Makomahu Beit El, V'ulam Luz Shem Ha'ir LaRishona. He names the place Beit El, which was the place originally called Luz. I got news for you. Beit El is nowhere near Yerushalayim. It's north of Yerushalayim. We know exactly where Beit El is. Yaakov is not in Yerushalayim, he's in Beit El. And despite what Chazal say, despite what Rashi says, the pshat of it is, he's in the city of Luz. Rashbam says explicitly, he's not in Yerushalayim, he's in the city of Luz.
They just like the word Bamakom.
I don't think so. I think it's very intentional. I think it's very intentional to confuse us to think that he thinks he's in a specific and religious place. You could even call, why is it called a Beit El? Because it's Beit Elokim, the house of God. It could have been a place that had temples and had a very religious history to it, for all we know. We have no idea. But the notion here that he almost looks like he was in Yerushalayim, it wants us to think he's almost there, but then, no, you know what? Not quite. And Chazal were bothered by that. So Chazal actually remove him from Beit El and put him in Yerushalayim. And this very famous story about how he gets there and he comes back. Passed it by, didn't understand, midrashically. But the pshat of it is that he's not there at all. That he's in Beit El. And so you have to ask the question, let me ask the question differently. If Abraham knew had a place called Har HaMoriah, which was the place of Har HaBayit, where he had the Akedah, where he said, Hashem Yireh, Hashem will choose, the place of God's choosing, the place that was to be the place of the house of God. Do you think he, right, and Yitzchok was there. Do you think that Masoret would have been handed down from father to son? Hold on to your horses. This is the place. It's going to be the place that God will choose. This is Yerushalayim for all eternity. This is going to be the capital of the Jewish people. Why does Yaakov go to Beit El and call it Shar HaShemayim? Is it possible that Yaakov doesn't know the location that Abraham used for the Akedah?
He didn't have a compass.
Chazal asked this question. Chazal say, is it possible that Abraham reached Har, the place to his father and grandfather, where his father was brought as an offering, and his grandfather prayed, and that he wouldn't pray there, and so he gets to Beit El, realizes that he passed it, and he turns around and comes back? That's in the Medrash.
Yeah.
But in the Pshat of it, he doesn't stop at Yerushalayim because he doesn't know about Yerushalayim. And I'll make the following observation. And I think it's very powerful. Yitzchak, from whom would Yaakov have known about the place of the story of the Akedah?
Yitzchak. Or his mom.
All right. Yitzchak doesn't strike me as somebody who tells a lot of stories. Yitzchak doesn't say much. Yitzchak never talks about the Akedah. In the entire story of Sefer Breshit, never once does Yitzchak mention the Akedah at all. Now,
why is that? Why does that have to be so surprising?
I don't think it's surprising at all, but it's an observation.
But it's surprising because they say that he's blind because of the Akedah. So he doesn't even use it to explain why he's blind.
Correct. So what about Abraham? Maybe Abraham would have told him the place of the Akedah. After the Akedah,
it was quite
Abraham
dramatic for him too.
Maybe, although less dramatic. But Abraham goes, after the Akedah, Abraham goes down to Beersheba. And the last thing he says about the place of the Akedah was, Hashem Yireh. Or, as we translated it as, Hashem
Yizkar.
The place that God will choose. That place is set aside as the place that God will eventually choose. But it's not yet chosen, and therefore Abraham doesn't yet reveal it. And the story of Yerushalayim, its significance, its history, dies with Abraham. Yitzchak doesn't share it because he doesn't talk about the Akedah, and Yaakov clearly, in the Pshat of Chumash, does not even know where that place is. Beit El is a religious place. Beit El is a history of idolatry and temples and spiritual culture. And Beit El becomes a very famous place. In fact, years later, after Yerushalayim is built and the temple is built, when the kingdom splits, and Yeravam ben Nevat needs to kind of demonstrate an anchor that will compete with Yerushalayim, he places a golden calf, the Agalim. He places one in the north, but the other one he places in the city of Beit El. It's almost like this contrast. We're going to reclaim Beit El. We're going to reclaim the Masoret of Yaakov. Because the Masoret of Yaakov was an alternative to the Masoret of what? Of David and Melech. It's a relatively new story. Yerushalayim, David chooses Yerushalayim, but to the people, Yerushalayim is a brand new city. It has no historical significance. It has no connection. They don't even know about the story of the Akedahs and its connection and its story linked to Yerushalayim. We do because we have Sefer, because it's, but we only do it because in the after, sort of the post Chumash world of Chazal, link the two. But even in Sefer Breishit, there's no explicit reference or connection between the place of the Akedah and Yerushalayim. The name is missing. All it's called is the place. And Abraham described it as a place that God will choose. Never is the place identified by name. The Masoret, the identity of Yerushalayim, goes to Abraham, goes with Abraham to his grave. And it remains a secret, a mystery, an unnamed place for all those generations. And so I come back to the question with which I started, which is why? And with this, we'll close. I want to share with you a very fascinating observation of the Rambam. The Rambam, in his Guide to the Perplexed, tries to address this question. And I think he hits on, I'm not sure you realized how big a chiddush he suggests, but certainly in our world today, I think we can, this interpretation resonates perhaps more than anything else I've seen. The Rambam raises this question. He says, "Asher lohit be'er b'torah v'lo nizkar b'frat." The fact that the city of Yerushalayim, the place of the Akedah, is not mentioned, is not explained, meaning it's not identified clearly, and it's not named explicitly. Remez alav, there's only these allusions or hints to it. Hamakom asher yivchar Hashem, the place that God will choose. Link back the place that God will choose to all those references to Hamakom and Sefer Bereishit. Yesh bo etzli shalosh chochmot. I have three explanations as to why. One, he says, shelo yachziku bo ha'umot v'yilachamu alav milchama chazaka kishyedu sheze ha'makom min ha'aretz hu tachlit ha'Torah. If the name of the, if the identity of the place had been known, the place of the Akedah had been identified, the land of Moriah, the hill of Moriah, the city of Ir David, the city of Yebus, if that Masoret had been known from the days of Sefer Bereishit, can you imagine the wars that would have taken place amongst the nations of the world to grab away from us that city that was our Masoret, our tradition of our holy place for all the years before we would get there, 400 years till we came back from Yitzhak Mitzrayim, from Mitzrayim. How many nations in the history of humankind would war and fight over taking that and claim it as their own? Vashniti says, "Shelo yafsidu mishu hu biyadam ata v'yashchitu v'chol yecholtam." If the nations of the world, remember the Rambam is writing this in the 12th century, if the nations of the world knew what Yerushalayim meant to us by name in Chumash, they would have destroyed it rather than letting us have it ourselves. And thirdly, he writes, "V'hi ha'chazaka shebem," this is, he says, is the primary reason. "Shelo yivakesh kol shevet hayoto b'nachalato b'limshol bo." God didn't want the tribes of Israel to fight over who would claim the territorial sovereignty over the mountain that would eventually become God's mountain. And it would have become a source of great strife and conflict within Israel, like over the kahuna, etc. And therefore, there's no command to build the temple until after you establish a king who establishes the unity of the tribes of Israel. As long as we were 12 tribes, I'm going to stop sharing for a second. As long as we are 12 tribes, the potential for us to war amongst ourselves for claim over a city that we knew all its history and its religious significance and its Masoret all the way back to Avraham Avinu was infinite. Every tribe would have killed each other in order to lay claim to God's mountain. And every nation of the world would have gone to war and launched crusades and pogroms and killed each other and killed us in order to claim and take away from us that place that was God's mountain. And so the story of the Akedah, fascinating, the place that Abraham says, the place that God will choose, remains an anonymous story. Abraham intentionally does not name it. God will choose it. And it remains a total mystery. Even David doesn't know the identity of that place by name, David chooses Yerushalayim for other reasons completely. And we're going to explore them Bezrat Hashem next week. But in the end, that's the convergence of the combination between God's choice and man's choice. David comes to Yerushalayim without any inkling that this Yerushalayim is the Yerushalayim of Avraham. And it's an intentionally omitted from the story of Sefer Breishit. By the time we get to Yaakov, the Masoret of Yerushalayim is gone. He's in Beit El. And we don't come back to Yerushalayim as a place that history links back to that story of Abraham and the Akedah and the place of God's choosing of God's mountain until David sets foot on Yerushalayim for completely political rational reasons. We will explore them Bezrat Hashem next week. So that's the story, the mystery of Yerushalayim's disappearance in Chumash.
It sure is an interesting story.
Yeah, kind of gives it a new twist.
Sure.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Stay with me to the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Yes. Bye.
Thank you very much.